The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to Football Weekly with Wantaway star man James Richardson on international duty with the world's strongest man in China. And Dave, second choice keeper for our cup tied on Ashes duty, it is left to me, Max Rushton, to marshal the troops for the next three games. Like John Phelan in Blackburn in the late 90s, it's going to be hard to get past Flowers and Friedel for a regular spot. But at this level, when you get a chance, you have to step up to the plate and seize that plate with both hands. On today's pod, the best league in the world is back. And we will make some hasty and meaningless conclusions based on just one game. With Arsenal fans ripping their season tickets up already, just how bad is it there? Jose Mourinho is back, referring to himself in the third person a lot. Have they sewn up the championship already? And can David Moyes now justifiably call himself the most successful Manchester United manager of all time? Plus, Spurs and Liverpool look good in patches. The rest of the Premier League sit in Spain. A Champions League preview and big news on Trevor Nelson's microwave. We have a panel today. Please, can you review your summer in 10 seconds? Norwich's Paul McInnes.
Slow descent into middle age.
Hair's James Horncastle.
I had a haircut and I went to Italy.
And Radio's Barry Glendening.
Spent some time in Spain, watched a bit of cricket and didn't do much else.
Would you like to know mine?
Yes.
Shingles on my face, minor celebrity golf, month in Ecuador. Right. I tell you what, shingles on your face is devastating. Like, really terribly bad. I'm not going to tell you any more about it, but it hurts.
That is a sometime nickname for Guardian Sports' Sean Ingle as well.
Shingles on your face?
Yeah, well, shingle. So if you've got shingles on your face,
I wouldn't recommend
unsavoury moment.
Crisis at Arsenal. They lost 3-1 at home to Villa. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain is out for something like 6 months. We will give Villa some credit at some point. But, Paul, how bad is this start for Arsene Wenger?
It just seems to be a continuation of however, three or four seasons worth of that. They are capable of turning in these utterly uncommitted and suicidal performances, which, you know, I think they were unlucky on the day, and maybe that penalty was, or the second penalty was or wasn't, and maybe he shouldn't have been sent off. But either way, they committed active defensive harakiri in the middle of the game, which against a good counter-attacking side like Aston Villa, is they're going to take advantage of it. And when you've got the fans already against you, it's not going to help to have a result like that on the first day of the season.
James?
Yeah. It kind of felt inevitable in some respects, because already at the Emirates Cup, I think they were down against Napoli at half-time, and they were booing them off the pitch. And so there's just this air, this atmosphere of just such negativity around Arsenal, which I think is understandable, because in contrast with other years, you know, this summer they came out with, you know, all these grandiose proclamations. You know, we're going to spend big. If we want to buy a £25 million player, we can do that. If we want to pay someone £200,000 a week, we can do that. And, you know, they've got close. It seems to be the same old problems. Like, you know, with Higuain, just a couple more million, just gone, a couple more million.
So they just not just know how to buy a player? I mean, is it that simple? They just don't have the ability to do it?
Well, it seems that there was one of the shareholders who sold out Stan Kroenke was on Twitter complaining, regretting her sale, but also saying that David Dean should be brought back toot de suite. And that's been a complaint that a lot of fans have made over the years. But was it the case of they were in for Higuain, Napoli came in up the bid and they didn't match?
Well,
it?
I think the case with Higuain is they thought he was overpriced as it is. Napoli then came in, and I think Napoli, if Arsenal had raised their bid, Napoli would just kept going and going and going, and that's perhaps why Arsenal backed out.
I don't think Arsenal fans looking at every single player that Spurs have bought and thought, we should have probably got them, and we're in the Champions League, so why haven't we?
Yeah, well, there's a number of factors. I mean, I don't think Kroenke is interested in winning trophies or having a successful club particularly. He's specifically there to make money. And he is making money, so he's happy enough with that. They were after Higuain. They had their heads turned by the possibility of maybe getting Luis Suarez, which meant Higuain got the hump because he was no longer their first choice target, much like you got the hump when it emerged that you're now third in the pecking order when it comes to presenting this. I don't think he knows about the couple you presented, Paul.
Oh, no, they were
what? Why, is there such thing as a fourth choice keeper? I can't think of one. Well, Brad Jones must be fourth.
I guess producer Ben still managed to get Max Rushton, didn't he? Whereas Arsenal,
if you'd had any pride or dignity like Gonzalo Higuain, you'd have gone to the football ramble instead. But you don't, so you just come crawling back, grateful for this small scrap that's been thrown your way.
Right, let's talk about what happened on the pitch. Wenger said the referee was mean-spirited. Quite like that as a complaint. He was just a bit nasty. He was mean.
Well, I can see where he was coming from.
He's a meanie.
Insofar as a lot of fouls seem to go unpunished, particularly on Jack Wilshere, who had quite a torrid time. But I don't think they can blame the referee for that defeat. You know, they can't blame the referee for the fact that they're facing a Champions League qualifier against Fenerbahce with possibly five or six of their first-choice players are likely to be missing and not having any cover for those players. So if a few decisions went against them on Saturday, then, you know, fair enough. But that is not Arsenal's problem.
I heard Neil Warnock saying that Wyman, Agbonlahor and Benteke is as good a front line as you'll see in the Premier League.
That's patently not the case, is it? But I mean, they are good players and they have great pace. But I think I just thought with both Agbonlahor's runs, to listen to Lambert talking him up afterwards saying, you know, he's completely unplayable, and it's classic Lambo hyperbole, and he gets these performances out of his players, but he didn't really actually have to do all that much. He was just really holding on to the ball and then eventually kind of invited that challenge.
I think come season's end, it may well transpire that losing to Aston Villa is not particularly shameful in any way. I've said in our preview show that I think they'll be the dark horses for the league this season. Not
the title.
Sorry, it's a big call. Not for the title, but I think they will do very well. And I think they'll take a lot of scalps this season.
Arsenal rumoured to be going in for Diame and Michu. Are they panicking now? They'd be good for Arsenal.
I was just about to say that I can't see why they haven't bought a defensive midfielder and a new centre-half, regardless of whether they're shopping at the top end of the market or not. They don't have somebody in that defensive midfield position who can do the job effectively. Diame would make great sense as a buy, I think, for them.
Yeah, he can be unplayable, to use that term. But I stress can be, because, you know, sometimes it's hot and cold. You know, there are occasions where he looks like the kind of piano that goes down the stairs. And you just can't, you've got to get out of his way. You can't get sort of near him. But I don't know, I just find with Arsene made this comment afterwards, which is like, what can I do? I can't buy players at 5-3, can I? And it's like, well, you've had June, you've had July.
But by the same token, I mean, Arsenal, people talk about Arsenal for the last 2 years of how badly they're doing and badly they're doing, and then they managed to nip in there in the last minute.
Yeah, but I think the last time they did the last minute shop or the supermarket sweep was disastrous. I mean, they got...
But not in terms of buying players, in terms of where they actually finish in the league.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But their luck's got to run out some. I think I've always thought of them as being the Wigan of the Champions League qualification, always getting in there when you expect them to go down and then when you expect them not to. And then Wigan went down last season. I think Spurs, their squad, just looks much stronger.
So could Arsenal, you know, fall to the depths of a seventh this season?
I think it's unlikely. I don't think there's enough quality below them to... saying, will Liverpool finish ahead of Arsenal?
Well, you've already got Villa winning the league, Barry. All right, let's move on. Chelsea cruised to a 2-0 win over the Hull City Tigers. Graham Souness said they played like Barcelona. And Jose Mourinho was big on saying that Abramovich was in the dressing room before the game, which shows how happy everyone is at Stamford Bridge. James, you were there?
Yeah.
Did you see the love and the happiness and the joy for everyone?
Yeah, it was this kind of... the second coming. You know, it was this messianic kind
of... Were you there for the second coming?
I wasn't. I managed to cover my face and get away from that. But But just the way he was talking in his pre-match program notes, you know, it's the first time in 6 years that I've written to you, my blues brothers, and all this sort of thing. And there's this kind of cultish kind of quality to it all.
But in the bizarre way that, obviously, it's sort of all nonsense, but the negativity that's surrounding Arsenal could actually affect things on the pitch. This ridiculous positivity might actually make a difference.
Yeah, well, Bruce in particular said we didn't stand the chance partly because of that atmosphere and how you know, united Chelsea, how Stamford Bridge has become a fortress again in some respects because, yeah, there isn't this dissent, this divisiveness which might prey on the players' minds, which I don't think was much of a factor anyway last year.
The atmosphere at Stamford Bridge was quite poisonous during the Benitez reign, well, certainly during the earlier stages of it, but
I didn't think it affected the players, though. Yeah.
But now it's at the Emirates where fans are holding up little sheets of A4 with hastily printed.
There were some printouts.
Exhortations.
There were some printouts at the bridge.
Ready-made. Ready-made. Sort of on your seat to say, I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, no. They were, you know, those are the club kind of plastic flags, which Benitez. But no, there were some really kind of terrible printouts, which were welcoming special one back. But God, Steve Bruce was in awe of, in terms of just basically going down on Mourinho in his post-match press conference, it was pretty close to that. Yeah, I mean, he was.
Don't know what's more controversial, Aston Villa winning the league or that.
But, you know, he was saying, are you all here for the special one, aren't you? And sort of giggling about it and how grateful he was to Jose for giving him Mikael Forsell on loan all those years ago at Birmingham, and now they've been in touch with ever since. And he made this joke about now he's asked for Frank Lampard to come on loan at Hull City, offering him the Humber Bridge.
Any word on Hull? They got better in the second half, didn't they? Or did Chelsea just take their foot off the gas and it doesn't matter?
They took their foot off the gas. I mean, it was classic old-school Mourinho in a way. I mean, that. Admittedly, he might have stopped at one in previous incarnation, but they played with a foot on the gas for about half an hour. Second half, barely got into a sweat. Never really looked in danger of conceding any goals. I find the whole thing bizarre. I do find the whole Mourinho act bizarre. He doesn't suit being charming. He suits being growly and acerbic. And to see this smile on his face the whole time, I'm just like, what is the...
Be like
what
if
is
you
the
smiled,
endgame?
Barry, wouldn't it?
I smile a lot.
Okay.
I'm a happy bunny.
Okay.
You're not smiling now. He's not even smiling when he's
He did get his custard creams, though. One of the club guys just snaffled a load of custard creams for him, which he then put in a napkin and pocketed and just walked off. Mourinho. That's
really?
That's why he's basically come back to the UK, I think. His
biscuits.
His love of custard creams, yeah.
How long can that continue, that ridiculous positive vibe?
Forever.
Forever.
Because he's like the new Harry Redknapp. Just the media just lap up everything he does. They love him to bits because he's
Harry
like...
Harry Redknapp will love that comparison.
He flatters them. He makes them all think they're special like him. And he, you know, they'll lap it up until, you know, I'll just obscure the fact that people are being served slightly less exciting football than they thought they were going to get.
Producer Ben wants your favourite biscuit.
Jaffa cake. Although it could be argued that isn't a biscuit.
it's a big debate, but you can have it.
Okay.
It's biscuit-shaped, isn't it?
Jaffa cake.
Yeah.
McVitie's chocolate caramel digestive.
I like a hobnob, but I mean, Bourbon biscuit is good.
Just a little hint, if you say your favourite biscuit is Jaffa cake, there's a very good chance they will send you
a large
Jaffa cake, actual cake.
Oh, really?
Because that's what happened last time.
Have you done this before?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Curse the lack of originality on the Guardian pod when it comes to reviewing biscuits.
Barry is bouncing up and down in his chair.
He's got happy now.
Big Jaffa cake.
Let's hope it gets here by Thursday. The nice people at Jaffa or whoever
like
makes it.
I think it is. Isn't it?
And goal line, we should touch about that. Goal line technology was used for the first time. I think it was the first time in the Chelsea game, wasn't it? Or was it used on a Saturday?
Yeah, it was. No, it was used. BT Sport, channel, yes, exactly. They showed us how it might have worked if it had been required at one point when Liverpool hit the post against Stoke. Okay. But it was actually used for the first time in the when Alan McGregor had saved one and it was possibly gone over the line.
And did we all like it?
Yeah, it looks good.
Yeah, it does. It's fun. It's got a touch of the kind of cricketing third umpire review.
Yeah, although a mate of mine was at the Arsenal game on Saturday, and he said at one point, just apropos nothing, something, it was flashed up on the screen, no goal, about 9 minutes after there'd been some manner of barely contentious issue, which nobody in the ground had thought was a goal anyway.
The Arsenal fans aren't depressed enough. Yeah. It just suddenly flashes up saying, you have not scored any goals today, again. Right, to link between Chelsea and Manchester United, do Chelsea need Wayne Rooney? They're apparently still after him.
I didn't think so yesterday because, I mean, Lukaku came on in the second half and kind of immediately looked... He held the ball up well, laid it off, and Schürrle, another one of their new signings, although Lukaku obviously came back from loan, he floated a shot on, nearly lobbed McGregor. So they looked good. A lot has been made about how Chelsea haven't done that much business this summer. There was just Schürrle and Van Ginkel, but De Bruyne in particular yesterday looked really good early stages. So I'm not sure whether they do need Wazza.
I'm still excited by the prospect of Mourinho reinvigorating Torres. I think he got involved in play yesterday. He didn't look particularly threatening as a got, but he interacted well with the front three, the midfield three, and they're quite exciting players. He's an exciting technical player, could still work.
All right, let's talk Man United then. Rooney did make a difference when he came on, but they 4-1 winners, a game at Swansea in which every expert suggested they would struggle or draw or lose. So were we surprised to see them so comfortable? Or actually, the first 30 minutes, Swansea were as good as them and then their defence fell asleep.
Well, I thought Swansea played quite well. Robin van Persie was the difference between the teams. Rio Ferdinand came out with some fairly powerful rhetoric afterwards, saying everyone in the media has written us off and we've kind of proved them wrong now. But, you know, you've beaten Swansea. Away from home, admittedly, but you know it's a pretty routine win for Manchester United, and yeah, they look good, and it'll be a relief for Moyes if you know Arsenal have got off to the worst possible start, and Manchester United have got off to a great start under Moyes, but you know it's just one game each. So.
His bid for Fellaini and Baines officially $28 million, which doesn't seem quite enough. Do they need them?
I've always thought that I thought that both of them would be great signings for Manchester United. I think I was at Carrow Road on Saturday, which you might, I'm sure we'll come to in
later. We'll come to in part later. Three, yeah, good
but,
tease.
But Fellaini,
the microwave story.
After the microwave story, not even before the microwave story.
I'll finish on the microwave story.
But just to quickly say, Fellaini was playing very deep in the midfield and as a kind of holding midfielder, and he was superlative. I just think you could play him there, you could play him as the number 10, you can play him right in the middle. He answers a lot of questions in the midfield, and particularly I think that's where United's weak spot still is.
I think there's this general perception that he's not a United player.
What that means.
Yeah, because he's. I think they want someone who's more creative, more flair player in that position. I mean, there does seem to be this inconsistency of going from Fellaini to Fabregas back to Fellaini. I mean, they're obviously two very different players. But having said that, I think if United were to sign Fellaini, it would be a good signing for all the reasons that Paul mentioned, because I do think they need someone with some physicality, someone who's actually very versatile, like Fellaini is. I think they could do a lot worse. They could certainly not buy anyone. That would be the Arsenal route.
Ben and I were chatting before the pod started, talking about the United squad, and I... Is it that they don't have any Galacticos apart from RVP, or just because they play for Man United and it's such a big club, they don't look like it, and if you put any of them in a Spurs shirt or a Man City shirt?
Well, I thought that, one thing that point relates to that is Valencia's assist for the second goal, which was just a beautiful, a kind of, deflected header came off, and he just one touch, low, hard across the goal, pinpoint to Welbeck, couldn't miss. And it's like one of these players who is really a humdrum squad player for United, but it's... And what he does, which is getting round and delivering crosses, he's exceptional. I thought it was quite interesting to see Anderson getting on, Anderson looking a little bit slimmer, cleverly in that midfield. He's obviously going to be pushing on with Jones this season. You might see Moyes being able to develop some of those squad players at United in a way that maybe they hadn't been able to the last couple of years.
And Danny Welbeck's now the best striker in Britain.
Yeah.
Good.
I think people have forgotten about Van Persie. Certainly before the Community Shield, yeah, a lot of the emphasis was on United not signing certain players and them needing to make a statement when, you know, in actual fact, they still have probably the best player in the league who, in these first two games of the season for United, has been exceptional. I mean, I think both goals on Saturday were tremendous in terms of technique.
Good point, James.
There you go.
That's Man United done. Man City start tonight against Newcastle, if you're listening on a Monday, so we can't talk about it because it hasn't happened. Let's talk Spurs instead. They had 100% possession, as far as I could tell. Probably should have won 2 or 3-0 against Crystal Palace. Ian Holloway was crazy mad about the penalty decision. Gary Lineker tweeted last night that if Spurs do get Will I Am, that player, and maybe two others, they could win the Premier League.
I think Barry's already answered that question. It's going to be Aston Villa.
Yes. Okay. So we're looking for second place.
Yeah. Second place is. I think listening to far too much football radio. Listening to far too much football radio this weekend. There's a lot of talk about how Spurs could qualify for the Champions League if they keep Bale, which I think really underselling this squad. I think if they keep Bale, there's no reason why they couldn't compete. There's some reasons, but Europa League being one of them, but they're serious contenders, I think so.
I think the idea that Spurs are a one-man team is quite reductive and quite it underplays how well the team gelled as a whole last season. Mm-hmm. Because I think if you look at the period where Bale kind of exploded from the springtime, start of the season, Adebayor wasn't really fit. They tried to get goals out of Defoe. Defoe gets injured. It gets to January. The Spurs, of course, don't sign a striker. Defoe gets injured. Can't rely on Adebayor. So you have to build a team around. You have to find goals somewhere, and put someone into position to score goals. And that was Bale. And they managed to get 25 goals out of him because of their good general team play. So I think. You know, as we saw yesterday, they were quite controlled, as you'd expect against a Palace team, which is just come up and probably not up to their standard. But I think if they were to sell Bale and they were to get Willian, including the additions they've got at the moment, they're going to be over in the top four, if not pushing on further than that.
Larry?
Couldn't disagree with any of that.
Paul, couldn't disagree with that.
I agree with myself.
Okay, good. Right, that is part one. In part two, Sid in Spain, and we look at the rest of Europe in depth at a glance.
If you're looking to get in shape, build your fitness and improve your well-being, then all you need is a decent pair of running shoes, a bit of determination, and the brand new Guardian Guide to Running podcasts. Our 8-week programme will transform you from complete running novice to someone who's able to run for 30 minutes non-stop. And if you're a more experienced runner and want to take things to the next level, then we've also got 4 special runs for you in our Advanced Running Guides. The Guardian Guide to Running Podcasts, available now on iTunes and theguardian.com.
Right, welcome to part two, which is an entirely European review. But in the small break between part one and part two, both Paul and James wanted to say something about David Moyes. Paul?
It's very brief. His touchline wear... Mm-hmm. He's got kind of like Lycra, very tight-fitting trousers and then big white trainers on. He looks like he's about to go for a jog, which if you think about it, in that mix of whether you wear tracksuit or suit, or makes him look a little weedy. I'm not sure.
He's not gone for either, are you saying?
He looks like he's on his way to a Bikram yoga class.
It's a smart tracksuit.
It's just a kind of highly functional, sporty wear thing. I'm not sure it's a good look for him.
I remember Reading's manager last year, Brian McDermott, said you have to earn the right to wear a suit.
Or you have to kill someone, don't you, and go to court.
And there was the Milan manager, he was in GQ earlier this summer saying that coaches who don't wear a suit should be fined. So, you know,
really?
Moyes should be fined.
Pulis should be fined.
Well, I was just about to say, I was most put out watching BT Sport.
Who?
Watching their coverage of Liverpool Stoke. They had Pulis on as a pundit. Mm-hmm. And there's just something weird and otherworldly about watching him talk about football while not wearing a tracksuit or a
baseball cap.
He looked quite smart.
They should have just let him wear that, yeah. I presume.
He didn't have his glasses on either. Well, he was sort of putting them on, taking them off.
Would anybody like to add anything about anything else any manager was wearing? Mourinho obviously looked very sharp. ABB looks sharp.
He does. He looks very good. He's got a new kind of coif, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's good. Right, well, let's talk about Europe then. Paul, you watched some Bundesliga football.
Yeah,
many congratulations.
Thank you.
No idea that was possible.
Like I say, I've been particularly tragic this weekend with just consuming as much football as I could get my hands on. And I saw the Munich game. There was no Götze, no Thiago until the end, but they Shaqiri appeared to be, yet another strong, talented, dynamic, forward-looking midfielder who dominated that game. And Mandzukic scored an absolutely stunning goal. A little bit dissimilar to Robin van Persie's first, but he just had a cross fired across at him and managed to readjust his body to get up to waist height and just volley it. Like an exercise at home, and they looked pretty comfortable, but didn't score that many goals.
They've got two wins out of two, so have Borussia Dortmund. In France, Falcao scored a penalty as Monaco beat Montpellier 4-1 to make it two wins in a row in Ligue 1. PSG drew again, but not very good. Ajaccio, is that how I say it, James?
Ajaccio,
who, as you told me, I obviously had no idea, based in Corsica and coached by Fabrizio Romanelli.
There you are.
An 85th minute goal for Cavani, though, so at least that's part of the £55 million paid back. But what happened in Spain? We can talk to Sid Lowe, who is there. Sid, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Nice to speak to you. It's not James or Dave, it's Max. But I hope we can cope with that. Right, let's start with Barcelona. They won about 100-0.
Yeah, very nearly, yeah. They were 1-0 up after 2 minutes 30. They were 5-0 up on 42 minutes. And at that point, I thought, well, they're not going to get another one before half-time. And I had to get to the Bernabeu, so I hopped in the car, literally turned the ignition in the key, turned the ignition on, and they got their six. They got only one in the second half. That always happens, doesn't it? Teams always scored loads of goals in the first half, virtually getting none in the second half. So 7-0 they won, which, of course, meant that Real Madrid went into their game knowing that they had to win. Now, that sounds pretty ridiculous, but it really did feel like that. You know, Madrid and Barcelona have kind of gone into this almost knockout mentality, even in the league, even in the first weekend.
And they did win.
They did win, but it was close. 5 minutes to go when Isco scored the winner with a header. By that time, Betis had thumped one off the bar. They'd missed a couple of good chances. They played really, really well, Betis. The guy who really tore into Madrid is a guy who brilliantly named Cedric, because, of course, he goes by his first name. And his buyout clause was €1.21. But Betis actually paid €25,000 for him, which is very nice of them, because the buyout clause was merely symbolic. And he was really, really good. But Betis in the end couldn't quite get away with the victory. Isco scored the goal, and Isco was exceptional. He said it was the first header he'd ever scored.
Like Trevor Brooking. Is there any reason why Real was so unconvincing?
I think there's a couple of things. One, I mean, the thing that Ancelotti talked about afterwards was the lack of balance between the midfield and the forward line, and he was complaining about there being a lot of space and that they weren't able to close the gaps between Kadira and Modric, and then the three plus one ahead of him, but ahead of those two. But it wasn't just that. I felt that while Isco had a really, really good competitive debut, they still have a slight problem with Madrid, because they've basically got three guys who want to play off the forward. One, of course, is Ronaldo, although he's been playing on the left the last few years. And the other two are Isco and Osil. And he had Isco and Osil supposedly playing wide, and neither of them were really happy there. And I think that he's going to have to try and find a solution to that. He was saying last night that he thinks he will, and I think he's probably right, just because of the talent they've got. But it wasn't quite right. And the other thing was that Betis were really quite good. Pepe Mello said afterwards that he'd asked his players whether they'd enjoyed it. And he said they have, and that's the most important thing, which is more than could be said for Levante, whose manager afterwards said, right, well, we've now left the dentist, it's someone else's turn.
Were Real Madrid fans crying out for Gareth Bale? They have massive posters of him over there.
No, No. I mean, there was a bit of whistling. There was quite a lot of frustration with Karim Benzema even though he got the first goal, because he kept on going offside, which for Carlo Ancelotti, who of course has worked with Inzaghi, that must have been pretty frustrating to see another player constantly being offside. And he just looked a little bit lackadaisical. And I think Madrid fans are probably a little bit on edge with Benzema. I think they recognise that he's very talented, but they perhaps think he's a little bit cold, which sometimes is an advantage. But I think they feel like there's a lack of, the way they describe it, a lack of blood about him. But as I say, he did score, and there is a certain frustration. But it wasn't, I don't think it's expressed in terms of a desperate desire to have Bale. In fact, if you listen to a lot of Madrid fans last night, what they were saying was that last night demonstrated that perhaps what they need is a number nine.
Grant Holt.
Grant Holt, that's the man. Rumours in Spain, by the way, that Radamel Falcao has been offered to Real Madrid, despite the fact that he's only just gone to Monaco. I'm not convinced by that, but who knows? I also, someone mentioned to me, I think you're not allowed to play for three clubs in the space of 12 months, so I don't know if that causes a problem as well. My guess is it won't happen. My guess is that it's just not the case.
Sure. Liverpool have got, is it Ali Sissoko on loan? James,
what's Estella doing?
I don't know, she's going absolutely bonkers.
She misses Dave Farrar. this guy Sissoko, do you know about his bad teeth, Sid, or do you want James can field this question about the
about
quality
his bad teeth?
Yeah, James.
No, I can't say I do.
He first came on the scene, I think, at Porto. He played against Ronaldo, and he did quite well when Porto played United. And Milan bid, I think, 12 million for him. And he went over to Milan for a medical. And he gave an interview, and one night it looked like it was a done deal. And then he failed a medical on the basis that he had poor teeth. He had bad teeth. And the reason for Milan vetoing it was, they could foresee, because of his teeth, that he would have back problems, possible groin problems in the future. So
how does that work? I mean, there's any medical expert here that can tell me if my molars are out that I'm going to struggle downstairs. I
think that they solved Bex's back problem because they found a hole in his teeth and they filled the hole and all that sort of repetitive strain from taking free kick corner and free kick corner just went, because that's probably why, you know, Bex has only just retired, because Milan's dentistry was so good.
Medical science is extraordinary, isn't it?
Doesn't Arsene Wenger do that? He makes
dentistry.
Sends players to have the teeth checked on a regular basis because you can spot potential problems elsewhere through orthodontic issues. I don't know. I don't know.
It's a bit like your balance, isn't it, and your ears. I mean, that seems weird to me.
Same.
I'd always say balance would be with your legs, but it's not. It's your ears. So
if there are any dentists among our listenership, they might post an explanation.
Third choice on Football Weekly. First choice on Dental Weekly. I would say,
well, Max, whenever it starts, I'm right here. Sid, is Ozil?
So no, I didn't know that about Sissoko. No.
do you know if
I'm just standing here thinking, Christ alive, yeah. Okay.
Do you know anything about Ozil going to Man United? Is there no chance of that?
No, Man United seems to be behaving very, very weirdly, don't they, in this transfer window? I mean, for example, putting in on Fellaini after the clause that means that they could have got him for a reasonable price has run out.
Yeah. It's a weird decision. It was anything to do with us. Real Sociedad are playing Lyon in the Champions League. Have they got any chance?
Yeah, they have. I mean, they're a really good side. They scored the first goal of the league, the first opening day of the league season, scored by Carlos Vela, who, of course, was an Arsenal player. And it was a really brilliant goal. I think they're a really, really nice team, Real Sociedad. They've got a nice combination of, if you like, from the qualities that Madrid and Barcelona have. So they keep the ball really well, but they're really, really quick on the break. Lyon, obviously, are not what Lyon once were, although, you know, I'm not going to pretend to know Lyon perfectly inside out, even though that, you know, their combinations with Spanish teams and Champions League over the last few years have meant that I've seen a reasonable amount of them. But Real Sociedad are a nice side, and yeah, I think they probably do have a chance. I think they're probably just about favourites.
Right, let's carry on with the Champions League. We touched on it briefly, but Arsenal go to Fenerbahce. They've got all sorts of injury problems. It's seemingly a crucial game in their season now, Barry.
Well, it's a weird one, not least because Fenerbahce probably shouldn't be in the competition. They were slung out by UEFA, given a two-year ban after their president was caught trying to fix matches. The ban's been temporarily overturned by the Court of Arbitration for Sport, but should Fenerbahce get past Arsenal, which is far from out of the question, they may be forbidden from competing in the group stages, which would possibly leave an avenue open for Arsenal to get back in if they get beaten. But it's strange. Fenerbahce have had their problems, although they seem to be being punished twice for the same scandal that they were involved in match fixing and attempted match rigging. Aziz Yildirim, their president, was convicted in July of forming and leading a criminal gang that rigged four matches and tried to rig another three. So it's difficult to know what will happen. Both teams have their problems at the moment, but we should probably focus on the Gooners.
Paul, would you like to preview Shakhtar Djurganda against Celtic?
Yes, I would.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Far away.
Or now?
Yeah.
Oh.
You can say no if you want.
I think I know nothing about Shakhtar. I know that the Celtic squad is in a little bit of flux, but they've had a reasonable start to the league season. They're obviously, I think in the same way as Arsenal, that you can switch into, that once you've, I think the club can eventually switch into a European style of form. They play a little bit differently. Arsenal play a little bit more compact when they play in Europe. And obviously Celtic will be stern physical competition for any opposition. Might even sneak an away goal.
Very good. James, would you like to preview PSV AC Milan? An easier task.
Yeah, it should be quite interesting, this one, because Milan are quite anxious about it. They think they could have got a better draw. They think they could have got, like, Pacos, Ferreira or something. Instead, they've got PSV, who've on their last two visits to Eindhoven, they've lost. And, you know, the season hasn't started in Italy yet. There's the Super Cup on Sunday, but Serie A doesn't get underway until next weekend, whereas the Eredivisie is now, I think it's three games have been played, and PSV are top. They've won all of their games, so it could be quite a tricky one for them, trickier than most people would probably expect.
Barry, would you like to preview Ludogorets Razgrad v Basel?
Yes, I would love to. Both very well organised teams.
Sot two back to four.
Yeah.
Sorry, hard to beat.
Good, well drilled.
Tough place to go.
Yeah.
I saw the Basel goals from last weekend on BT Sport 1 at 1:30.
On and who? Really? Yeah. You've got to get out more, I'd say.
I know, they're all right, see?
We've all seen Basel play in the last couple of seasons, and if they're as good now as they were then, I would fancy them to beat who you said.
Ludogorets Razgrad.
Yeah.
In the Europa League, Spurs go to Dinamo Tbilisi. James.
Yeah, it's in Georgia, isn't it?
Swansea play
Georgia.
Petrolui Ploiesti.
We need Jonathan Wilson for this. Yeah.
I'm going to back Petrolui for an unpredicted away victory.
And I'll go back to James for Fiorentina, who travelled to Grasshoppers.
Yeah, I think that Fiorentina are a good, like, sort of outside bet for to win this competition. They've had a bit of an indifferent pre-season, but there's a lot of enthusiasm around them because they played the best football in Italy last year, and they've added to the team with Mario Gomez, which a lot of people were surprised they were able to get him, Giuseppe Rossi, Joaquin. One of their best players is hurt at the moment, David Pizzaro, who's very important to their play. But I think they should get past that, and they should hopefully go deep in that competition.
And the winner could face Wigan in the group stages.
Oof.
Big. Welcome to part three of the pod. Let's continue our review of the Premier League. Liverpool 1, Stoke 0. We've touched on it briefly. Sturridge scored a goal. They saved a penno. Barry, you saw it.
Yeah, I was impressed with Liverpool. Without being massively impressed. But yeah, I thought they got off to a good start. It could be argued they were lucky to get away with the 3 points because Jonathan Walters missed yet another penalty, much, I'm sure, to the utter annoyance of many Stoke fans. Stoke haven't changed a huge amount. Since, I mean, the personnel is much the same. I don't think they've brought in many players, but
They weren't knocking it about.
No, it wasn't long balls. There were times they were trying to play it out at the back, and there were times when they had Liverpool under a lot of pressure, and the game was at Anfield, so they deserve credit for that. And I think just basically on the strength of that one game, both fans of both teams can take a lot of encouragement from what they saw.
I definitely heard the chant, "We're passing the ball, yeah. We're passing the ball, we are Stoke City, we're passing the ball."
Coutinho's just got praise, hasn't he, since he arrived. Could he be player of the year? I mean, how good is he and what difference has he made?
I don't know. I think...
I'm trying to make some meaningless conclusions from one game, obviously. But.
He benefited, I think, from being an unknown quantity when he first arrived here. I think he'd shown when he wasn't injured that, yeah, he could be bright. I think there were a lot of misgivings about his size and, someone who could be quite easily pushed off the ball. I mean, he looked bright in certain spells against Stoke. But I'd be interested to see, A, if he can keep fit for an entire season, and B, if he could sort of maintain this sort of level. Because when he is on form, he's a joy to watch. But as a lot of the passing patterns that Liverpool seem to play, I mean, some of the football in the early stages against Stoke was incredible.
The that three at the front, they were very very mobile, getting in and on each other's wavelengths quite quickly. And Iago Aspas, you know, he was getting more space as a result of the attention to Coutinho, and he had strength and good touch on the ball. But what I really thought was impressive, what's interesting about Liverpool was they played with three in central midfield and three players with real physical attributes to their game in Lucas Gerrard and Henderson. And I think actually that, when you think about Brendan Rodgers' teams and all that flighty passing football, but that was actually a real steal in the middle of the park, which could be good for them.
Those guys can all play, though.
Yeah, they can. Yeah. Oh, definitely. Henderson had a good game.
Both goalkeepers were excellent as well. Mignolet got off to a bit of a shaky start. He had a couple of flaps, but they were outstanding. And I think them, along with David De Gea, will be the three standout keepers in the Premier League this
season. I'm always impressed with Lloris and how quickly he comes off his line. He's like a sweeper for Spurs, I think. How long do Stoke persist with Jonathan Waters taking penalties? Because he's missed, I don't know how many, he missed like three last year maybe.
Was that
missed
Chelsea
two in
game?
A row.
Did he score an own goal and miss?
Yeah, he had a bad day. Who do we give penalties to for Stoke? Robert Huth? Just get behind it and hammer the damn thing.
What's wrong with giving to Peter Crouch?
There's nothing wrong with it.
I can give it to Peter.
Can he take penalties?
I think there are quite a few Stoke fans who seem to be losing patience with quite a lot of their players, among them Walters, among them Matthew Edington, Crouch. I think they want to see a shake-up before the close of the transfer
window. They definitely need more dynamism in that final third. They didn't.
Jermaine Pennant came on as well and didn't do a great deal.
But it's interesting that Hughes has brought him back into the fold because he's one of the few players with a bit of pace and a bit of trickery in him.
All right, let's move on. Paul, you were at Carrow Road.
Yes.
Ricky van Wilswinkel.
Yes.
Who we obviously all love.
Yeah.
And it turns out it's because he's Dutch, he's just really cool as well.
The Wolf. Yeah, I mean, he dresses like a pop star as well. He's got his little beard and his little quiff. And he's very polite, nice smile.
What's the Norwich fans song?
It's Ricky, 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 Ricky van Wolfswinkel.
Clever.
Ricky van Wolfswinkel, and so on, trying to force the syllables in.
Are you happy with?
Yeah, I think I went with my dad, and I think we both came away thinking after stroking our chins that we were happy. We were missing at least four players who would have played in the starting 11, including the top two players from last season and one of our most exciting signings. Everton did have a lot of the ball, but they didn't really threaten. They only really got behind the back four like once. And we, in moments, looked to have quality going forward. But we were playing against a very strong Everton team. I mean, I think that's probably their first choice 11, maybe Kone instead of Jelovic. And they still had that strength and aggression from the Moyes era, but obviously they were playing a lot of pretty passing.
I heard the line, you know, Ross Barkley scored, and that's great for England in a World Cup year.
Yeah, no, put any pressure on the lad, eh?
Thoughts?
I think he had a good game, but I thought Coleman had a really good game. Morales had a really good game. As I said already, I really like Fellaini. He's strong. He's really strong on the ball. And he obviously has, technical ability. The way he got that shot off, he was he'd already been closed down. He pushed it onto his left foot. He's right-footed. Didn't have much space then, and just pinged it in about a six-inch hole in the far post. But you know, it's going to be. You really want 2-3 seasons of consistent play before you start talking about somebody being a save of the national team.
Barry, would you like to give your verdict on a 1-0 home defeat for Sunderland against Fulham?
Yeah, it wasn't an ideal start. I thought Sunderland were kind of nailed on to win it, to be honest, but they had all the play. Fulham scored from, I think, their only shot on goal. They got one corner and scored from it, some slack marking at the far post, which Paolo Di Canio was very quick to absolve himself of blame from, saying that I wasn't playing. It wasn't Paolo Di Canio's fault. He was also referring to himself in the third person this week, which is always a worry. Five of Sunderland's new signings got a run out. Four of them had never played in the Premier League before. Apparently, they played very well. And, bad result for Sunderland after a good performance, and a good result for Fulham after a bad performance.
Stat attack. Emmanuel Giaccarini gave the ball away 15 times.
That's a great start to the season, isn't it? James, tell us a bit about Osvaldo. Southampton won at West Brom. They've since broken their transfer records. Again, I think signing Osvaldo from Roma for around 15 million.
Yeah, he's like a footballing kind of Khal Drogo. He's a very, very smouldering, handsome man. For the last three seasons in the Liga and Serie A, he's averaged about a goal every other game. But, you know, he scores some spectacular goals. I mean, if he scores the kind of goals that he has at Roma and in Espanyol, I think St. Mary's won't have seen this sort of thing since Letizia. I mean, he's a completely different player. He's a target man striker, but he scores some sensational bicycle kicks. I mean, I doubt there's a better bicycle kicker in football. But he's a troubled soul. He's very sort of, you know, he's quite temperamental. He likes to punch advertising boards, slap his teammates.
New Tamari Ketz buyer. That's what we're looking
at. Well, he's also kind of a quite a hipster like player as well. He's got his hipster specs. He likes to go see the Rolling Stones in London. I think that he was kind
That's
of
not very hipsterish.
Well, it is in.
I think they're coming back. The Rolling Stones. Really? They're back in. The kids all around Hoxton are crazy for them.
Yeah, he's.
And where's he from?
He was born in Argentina, but he's an oriundo. He plays for the Italian national team. So I mean, it's a great coup, I think, for Southampton. He's reunited with Pochettino, who he worked with at Espanyol. But I think I mean, a lot of people said, oh, it's a lot of money, and he gets sent off needlessly a lot. But I think he's great value. I think he's definitely for Southampton. I think he could push them into a mid-table, into maybe even, dare I say, going for a Europa League place.
I think one of the interesting things will be at the top end of this group, at the mid-table sides who might be looking to break into Europa, because I was very impressed from what I saw of West Ham at the weekend.
I haven't name dropped yet, but I thought I would name drop.
Boom.
On Friday, James Corden was telling me.
Oh, so he was. Cheeky chappy James Corden.
James Corden, who came to christen the Soccer AM kick a ball through a hole game, which is all new. He told me that he thought West Ham could challenge for Europe, and it's the best squad they've had for years.
Yeah.
Can you echo his thought?
Yeah, I mean, I just thought that they're still obviously, they're always going to be hard to beat because they're a Sam Allardyce team, but a rejuvenated Joe Cole is not a bad thing to have in your squad. Two wingers, you know, two decent wingers now. If Carroll is fit, I'm not sure they'll score an umpteen amount of goals, but I think they will be competitive in most of the matches they play. And I think the Southampton squad looks really good as well.
All right, we'll finish with a Twitter question from Kane, which is, which new signing were you most impressed by?
Cabral, Sunderland, I think will be a big success this season. He's impressed in pre-season, he impressed against Fulham, and while he won't, almost certainly won't be the most impressive signing of all the new signings, he will be more impressive than any of Arsenal's.
For me, it was Nathan Redmond. First time I can ever think that Norwich have a young England prodigy in their team, and we've got one in him.
I was impressed with De Bruyne, although Chelsea technically signed him last year. But I think from what I saw of the second half of Spurs Palace, I thought Etienne Capoue looked like a powerhouse. He monster in midfield.
That Dembele, Paulinho, you get them all together. It's tough. The best. Tom Champion, Cambridge United's new skipper. I went to Welling away solid 2-2 draw. We're top of the conference, and yeah, he pulled all the strings. So look, we will be back next Thursday.
Trevor Nelson's back.
So Christmas Day, all right. I'm hosting, okay, which is actually quite stressful. There's 11 of us, and Auntie Gay turns up with Christmas pudding and says, "Where's the microwave?" See, I don't have a microwave because, well, I don't have one. Not a lot of space, sideboard space in my flat. And I'm like, I haven't got a microwave. And we're like, oh, what do we? No Christmas pudding. It's a disaster. Trevor Nelson obviously lives almost next door. And my close neighbours are away. So I ring Trevor and I say, and he answers the phone. And I say, have you got a microwave? And I've got a spare microwave. Do you want it? So I went round and Trevor gave me his spare microwave. And it's still in my flat. But quite brilliantly, I only had 10 chairs. So then about half an hour later, I had to ring Trevor Nelson. And he was going on to somewhere else, but he doesn't just sit at his house. At Christmas Day. And I said, have you got a spare chair? And he went, yeah. So I went there, and he answered the door and gave me his spare chair. And he was in his house listening to Trevor Nelson's One Extra Christmas special. And that's the end of the pod. Thanks very much, chaps. Appreciate your time. I'll be here on Thursday. I don't know if any of you are, but there'll be some people who know about football.